This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 778, brought to you by Macroverse, next generation comics plus webtoon. Download the app at www.macroverse.com. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, and getting their shots.
Get about my way, it's Grand Poo's turn to shine. Heard them seeds ride the pine and get paid, no, never mind. One time as I sew it up like Dr. Frankenstein, yeah. Chickens ride the pony cause the rhyme flow genuine. As I do it like that, yeah. Do it like this, uh-huh. Shorty, watch your step or you might get rocked like Chris. Are you feeling this? Feeling you
dig the way. Hello, it's going. Hello, Pick of the Week episode 778. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh W. Flanagan.
That is my new middle name. You've just officially changed it.
I feel like Waldo fits you.
Joshua Waldo Flanagan. That does make me sound more like a late 19th century robber baron.
Yeah.
And Joshua maybe Waldo Flanagan.
Maybe riches will follow.
And bought huge tracts of land in the Nebraska territory.
That's right. And then he mysteriously disappeared. We are a fanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks our favorite one. We call the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book. Then we'll talk about other books, the patron pick. Powers, hopefully listener mail. Josh is being very optimistic with listener mail this week. We'll have a good time.
I wasn't really. I was just giving us options.
Okay. I thought, wow, three emails in this script. That's optimistic. Here's your spoiler warning. The review show, exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick this week.
I did have the pick this week. And
Weird week.
Yeah, actually it was. I don't know that I put my head around it.
Not a bad week, but a weird week.
I enjoyed reading my pick of the week is Beta Ray Bill number 2. We'll get to it. Beta Ray Bill number 1 was also pick of the week, and I don't like doing that, just for the record.
Ray Bill number 2 of the newly announced 5-issue miniseries.
Okay. So.
Which makes sense, because otherwise I feel like if Daniel Warren Johnson had to do this all the time forever, he would die.
Yeah, and we don't want that.
No.
So this week was a weird week in that, so I got my second vaccine shot on Tuesday night. And so on Wednesday,
not good for reading comics.
It was not good for reading comics. Like I sort of did some and then backed up, and I didn't have that kind of focus at all. So as I was sort of recovering more on Thursday, I was still pretty beat. But I had read like a handful and I'd actually enjoyed what I had, but not much. I remember I started to read. Actually, you know what? You have this later on the list, but you put Batman Superman on here, and I started to read it on Wednesday, and I went, nope. Like, I could not focus on it. So anything I liked, I sort of put off until later, and then, you know, like, Thursday night, I just sort of went house on them. I did not enjoy myself, but when I went back to, like, look at the overall list, there weren't really many standouts or things to talk about. So
yeah, there was a lot of things like, that was good.
Yeah, but so at
there's
the
a
end
lot of
the
books, I think people need to understand, not everyone, but some people, some of the listeners and viewers. If we don't talk about a book, just we didn't like it. There's a lot of books I read are just like, that was good. I got nothing to say about it. It doesn't go on the list. So
or that we just
like, I enjoyed a lot of things this week.
We just hadn't already said. Right. Like if we talked about a certain book, you know, sometimes a new one comes out and it's like, you don't want to hear us go, yeah, it was just like before, or repeat ourselves. So that's a little of that. But Beta Ray Bell 2...
So here we go with Beta Ray Bell number 2.
No, but here's the thing about it, is that I thought it was really good in a very... not very different, but it brought new things to the table that the first issue didn't have in them. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funnier.
It was funny, yeah.
It was more fun. They brought together... Daniel Warren Johnson brought together like a little team, a little crew. Mm-hmm. I thought bringing in usually when I see Scourge show up in a comic, I'm not happy about it. I'm like, oh, this guy, because it's I don't know what to make of him. He's one of those characters.
I kind of like him because he's the Asgardian who just loves guns, which is so not an Asgardian thing.
Yeah,
he should love axes, and so that's kind of endearing that he just decided M16s are awesome.
I feel like that's just like and that's the thing that the MCU has really added to it that I don't think was in the comics as much. Maybe it was. I don't know. But he showed up in the comics. I don't know if it was during Jason Aaron's run, you know, but he's Odin's brother, and it was sort of unclear whether he was a good guy or a bad guy. And I think they use him for whatever it is they need him to be. But in this context, you know, I like the idea, like, he was in Valhalla, bored out of his mind. They had all sorts of weapons, but they didn't have any guns. And he just wants to go on an adventure and be helpful. And he's like, no, I'm your ride or die bro. And so he just had to go. And then the other character is Pip. I don't remember who Pip is.
He's a little troll, like a troll with the furry legs. Yeah, he's been around for a while.
So, you know, they go with him and it got very silly, I think, which was not a thing that the first issue was. The first issue was like sad, you know,
and giant, like Lord of the Rings size battles.
Yeah. And so this one, we got to have a little fun with it, and I enjoyed it. I was really entertained in a way, but in a different way. Basically, it had everything that I liked before plus more. And I thought, oh, that was really fun. And then you got a huge double page spread of his ship.
Oh, how long do you think that took him? Jeez.
Oh my God! And I made sure to spend time looking through it. There was an arcade room. You got Marvel editorial down in the corner. Like, it was a little wacky. He's got different suits up in one place. He has a gun and sword room. You know, there's his bedroom.
There's a guy playing a guitar in one of the rooms.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's got pin.
Who's that guy?
He's got three pinball machines.
So Marvel Editorial has a room, and then there's a guy playing a guitar, which I maybe a reference to his book that we read from Image, the Murder Falcon one, whatever that was.
Yep.
And then down in the hull, in the very bottom,
there he is drawing.
He is down there drawing. Yep.
I was looking for him. I was like, he's got to be here.
Where's Waldo?
Yeah,
there's a lot of people on this ship. There's another dude on a computer.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's a good time. So like that sort of showed me like, oh, okay, we're having fun with this, you know. And Scourge is, he's drinking, he's way into it. He's up to 100 the whole time, so you can see Carl Urban doing it, you know. And then I guess like aging hipster Odin working at the bar, and he works there as long as he can brew his own beer in the back to pass the time. You know, it was very silly. And it
was silly, but also it didn't lose the tone because there was the undercurrent, at least between
of impending doom.
Bill and Pip about their appearance.
That was also that was a really nice scene.
This entire thing is about, you know, in the so Beta Ray Bill looks like a horse, but he doesn't. But that's not his true appearance. So he looks just like an alien, like a cute little alien dude, like Alan the Alien. Mm-hmm. But when he becomes Beta Ray Bill, he looks like a horseman. And he changes back and forth with his hammer. But his hammer was destroyed. So he can't change back from a horseman. So we saw in the first issue, you know, Sith wanted to get it on. But Sith was like, hey, change back to your human shape. And he's like, I can't. And so she was like, oh, you've got a giant horse mouth. So he's going on a quest for a new hammer that will help him change back to human, and that's his underlying being. And then at some point, Pip's like, I stowed away in your ship to join your crusade because look at me. And that was really sad.
Yeah.
So I thought that, I mean, amongst all the funniness and the action, the humor, this is really undercurrent of sadness because the entire thing is predicated on the fact that Bill feels ugly.
And I think that's interesting that he basically said, listen, I've done all of these things for everybody else. I feel guilt. Mm-hmm. I have these problems. I, you know, all of this stuff. And I just want to have this one thing for me. And I'm willing to do anything for it.
Right.
And, you know, and, you know, anybody who's read a story and thought about it before is like, oh, it's not going to be about his appearance eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the story can't end with, I made myself pretty again. Like, that's not drama. And right. So, but I don't know what that's going to be. Like, I know that much, or I'd be surprised if that didn't happen, but I don't know what it is that he's going to find or end up with or be, but it sucks that he had his hammer taken away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, what was interesting is that I was reading this and I started to think, I was like, well, he wasn't always able to change back and forth. So I think that the idea was like Alan the Alien, he, you know, he was transformed into this thing. And then through the power of the hammer that, that Odin gave him, like he figured out a way that he could sort of change back to what he used to be. And that brought
him peace. But I would challenge something you said, just because it's not about him being pretty. It's, this is not his body.
True.
He's not this. This is not him. He's the other guy. So this is who he becomes when he's going to be the badass Beta Ray Bill. But when he goes back to, you know, this is like if you could transform yourself into some awesome, you know, jacked, you know, fighter, but that's not you.
Well, that's the question though. Like if you go to war, can you come back and be who you used to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the question that's really going on. Like, you know, he was made for war. He went through all of this stuff and he's trying to find peace, you know, and is that by going back to what you were or coming to terms with who you are? You know, like it could be all sorts of things. I'm not writing the story for him or whatever, but either way, there's a lot there. You know, there's the fact that you can have this conversation about it, the fact that you can think about it this way. And I actually think this is in a lot of comic book stories, but I don't think that it is communicated at all. Like when you talk to comic book writers, they will talk like this about what's going on, but you're like, that was a completely forgettable Wolverine arc though. But with here, like you can see it. I swear to God.
Well, Daniel Warren Johnson is incredibly talented.
Yes. But it's, you know what? It's also, it's in a way though that there are people that you have met who make comics who are not shy or not trying to stay away from the fact that their work they think their work is greater than maybe other people do or that it is. And I get this work, while it is great and it is brilliant, there's this odd humbleness to it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And even the way that he was writing, you know, in the back, like it's like he doesn't know it.
He also has the luxury of being able to sort of go into the side and tell these stories. Like mm-hmm. he's not in the grind. But so they have to go to Muspelheim, and get the swords known as Twilight that will help supposedly help Bill. But so that's
it's
their
the mission. Only it's Surtur's sword. It's the only weapon with enough magic and power in it because Odin doesn't have enough power in him anymore to make another hammer like that, which led me to the question, like, well, then doesn't Thor, and wouldn't
You'd
Thor
so,
help
yeah.
him?
Well, they had a fight.
But, you know, they're still...
And then the big cliffhanger is that the ship, you know, Beta Ray Bill's ship, which is called Scuttlebutt, this giant ship, had an AI personality running it, and something happens in their transfer to Muspelheim, Muscle Beach.
Mm.
And now the ship has a sentient self, like a little sexy robot.
So I think we can see where this is going. That's where it's going.
She has very dangerous head things. So.
That power is going to be used to transfer the ship, and I don't know, into I hate doing
it. It's very, very good. I liked it, the 5-issue miniseries.
Oh, I think that that's...
You know, he gets to tell his story and not, you know, what do I have to do in issue 87?
And it's a lot here.
27.
I want one story, and there's a lot to do, and like anytime that there's sort of this much on the page, both artistically and otherwise, it can get tiring, no matter how good it is. So, you know, 12 issues of this might be too much. Five sounds awesome. Five sounds perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that keeps going. But yeah, it wasn't really much of a choice this week, I don't think, when I looked at sort of everything. I enjoyed stuff, but this was the only thing that impressed me. And there was
What I was going to pick if I had the had the honor of picking something this week, but you can't go wrong with this. This was also a week where, you know, Silk was also announced as a 5-issue miniseries. A lot of, you know, that's what the companies do now. They don't tell you until the second issue.
Yeah.
They try to hook you.
It's this weird, like, we need you to buy this, but if we tell you, you're not gonna. So,
you know what is interesting, and this, I don't want to derail this conversation because we have the three emails to get to, but the 5-issue miniseries as opposed to the 6,
mm-hmm.
because USA Agent finished this week, it was 5 of 5. You know,
that sounds to me like an economic issue of paper trades.
Could be
like it's, you can basically charge the same amount for $20 for a 5-issue trade as you could for a 6-issue trade, but you're saving money on several fronts.
Yilda Ray, Sinar, Richard Eisenhoff, Simon Boland.
Eisenhoff's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
A long time. So there's been a lot of Marvel's books. This is another one of the books that is tied in tangentially to Marvel's, mm-hmm. the seminal Busick and Alex Ross miniseries from the 90s. We've talked about several of them. Some of them have been picks of the week. This one's actually written by Kurt Busick as opposed to just being overseen or curated by.
This is it's Astro City.
It's basically Astro City. It's like as he says in his requisite essay at the end, this is any hero, any time, any place. And so here we get Captain America.
You even get Yilda Ray Sinar drawing as if he's Brent Anderson. It's true. Weird. Because that's not weird. What I think of as Sinar's work.
No.
It's a weird thing. Didn't love it?
It was okay.
I liked it. I was interested in it.
But it didn't. I was like, I wasn't at any point like, wow. There was a couple times, in fact, I was like, ooh.
I didn't know what it was going to be, so I had no expectation.
I didn't love the art.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I was excited. I was like, oh, I haven't seen Sinar in a little while, but he's sort of doing this style. And I'm not saying it didn't fit, because I do think it fit with what this was, but it took a little while to sort of just figure out what the thing was. You know, it was like reading a pretty good issue, an okay issue of Astro City, but in the Marvel world, which was, by the way, the point of, you know, Marvel's, wasn't it? It was like seeing it from the ground, from the eyes of other people. So,
and he says that in the back, that Marvel's was about from the ground level. So now this is from the hero level.
Yeah.
Which just seems like every other superhero comic, but I don't want to keep making fun of it. I did enjoy reading it. There was a couple of things where I feel like an editor should have stepped in. Who, like, the scene opens with Carol, you know, Captain Marvel, and Steve eating lunch in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, and Steve raving about how the food's so much better now. It's all artisanal and real ingredients, unprocessed. It tastes like the food he ate in the 40s.
Yeah.
And Carol calls him a hipster doofus, which is a phrase I haven't heard since the 90s.
I liked that scene. I understand what you're saying, and I don't think it's invalid, but I did like that scene.
No, the scene was great, but the phrasing took me out of it. No one uses – that's a phrase from Seinfeld.
I'd actually like to go ahead –
that's a Seinfeld called Kramer.
I'd like to go ahead. Yeah.
So if you're telling me this book takes place in the 90s, sure, but it doesn't. There's no other indication that it does. And so that took me right out of it. I was like, wait, what? No,
that didn't take me out nearly as bad as when – Steve says it's been a minute to whoever the villain lady is. And I was like, whoa.
Right. That was the other thing. So either it takes place now and he's talking like internet people, or it takes place in the 90s. And that makes Carol's phrase make sense. One of those phrases has got to go.
Okay. Well, two things here. At least they know how to hold their sandwiches.
That's true. There's one, no food.
And two
issues in this one.
Does she have a Minor Threat shirt on? And if so, what the hell? So
Sinar's really the Minor Threat.
She is older. Like, yeah. I have the feeling that she's old. So maybe if she's like closer to our age, like if maybe she's in her late 30s or whatever now, then she would say hipster doofus.
No, she should. No one does.
I do sometimes.
I don't say it. You don't say it. No one says it.
I remember it though. That's not a thing that is like, oh yeah, I remember that. I think about it a lot.
Cue the email of someone saying, I say it all the time, which is fine, but no one does.
Well,
she'd call him a hipster, 100%. Just scratch the doofus line. That's all the editor has to do.
I got
to
say, that part didn't bother me. I know what you're saying. I don't think you're incorrect.
The other problem is that the editor is Tom Brevoort, who's older than Kurt Busick. So.
Yeah. The Minor Threat shirt, though. That I didn't notice that until I was looking at the page. Like, that's weird. Mm-hmm. Also, I didn't know she was from Boston, but I saw that in another book this week.
Well, too. Is she from Boston or is she wearing like a Brooklyn?
No, she. Chris Eliopoulos did like is oh, doing like an all ages thing, and she's from Boston. So, which I did not know.
I thought it was a Red Sox hat. Then I thought maybe it was a Brooklyn Dodgers hat because red. That's fine. Whatever.
Yeah,
I hate her now.
Oh, stop.
So this. I mean, there is an element of the ground level stuff here. So while they're eating their sandwiches, there's a dude dressed like an old blacksmith because it's Brooklyn, and I used to live there for 11 years, so I can say that. Keep your Brooklyn emails to yourselves. He has to leave his lunch date because he got a ping for his app. See, this is definitely not the 90s.
Yeah.
He runs a service called Kashoom.
But I'm saying Steve and her are now like middle-aged people or like, you know, like older, like either, I guess we are sort of the very tail end of Gen X or like older millennials, more or less. So they would have grown up watching Seinfeld.
Have a conversation about Captain America being a millennial. Let's just move on.
Well, he's not really, but just...
Physically. He's a boomer.
He's not a boomer. He's no. He's greatest generation. He's not because the boomers are the kids of his generation.
You're right. He's the greatest generation. Anyway, this guy's got an old fantastic car that he uses to ferry tourists around New York in hopes of sighting superheroes. That's his business. And he ferries a couple from Ohio around.
And we're only Superman talking about, this is only the second half. The first half is this history of Shin Kong, which is like a Vietnam stand-in.
Oh, we talked, that's right. Shin Kong, do you remember from that awesome Mark Waid miniseries, History of the Marvel Universe, like last year, the year before?
Yeah.
Remember when they invented Shin Kong as like the Vietnam stand-in, but it's not Vietnam?
No, I don't remember it from that.
It was in that book. There was like suddenly the Punisher went to war in Shin Kong. Hmm. Yeah. For some reason, this is their... fake Vietnam.
I'm fine with that. I think them...
It's odd, but it's a very DC thing.
I figured it out. It was the timeline in that first half was very strange. Because each of the top of the page would be, 17 years ago, 40 years ago, or 1947, and then the next one is 17 years ago. And I was like, wait, 17 years ago from 1947? Or now? And then it goes to 12 years ago, and it's Daredevil... putting on a USO show in what would be the Vietnam War, but that's 12 years ago.
It doesn't make any sense. I guess there might still be troops in Shin Kong.
And then 10 days from now, Captain America's in space and does an awesome jump from space using his shield, which is rad. And then Shin Kong has a dome over it of some kind.
Socialist Republic of Shin Kong.
So there was a lot here.
It was a lot.
Like it wasn't.
I didn't dislike this, but it was very.
Everything about it wasn't great, but I was like, at least I'm thinking about it. Like at least this, I had to do some work in it. And it's very thin line from this is confusing to what is going on here. Like there's a difference between when it's annoying and when I was almost having fun trying to figure out the timeline. And that's because I give Kurt Busiek a hell of a lot of leeway because he doesn't let me down historically. So I was like, I'll go with it. I'll figure it out. It's fun. They packed a heck of a lot into one book.
There was. I had actually totally forgot about the whole prelude of the Shin Kong.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? Oh, right.
It's the first half of the book.
Yeah, you're right. Well, the title page doesn't come to the middle, so I was very confused. Fantastic Four 31, Dan Slott, Arby Silva, Jesus Abertoff, and Joe Caramagna, stalwart Joe.
Are you still down with the FF?
Yeah. This is still one of my favorite Marvel books. Although, I don't love the... whole thing and Reed hate each other thing. I love it.
I feel like that is they're coming to it more and more often. So I feel like this is going to be the sort of emotional climax of this run. It's basically is that they have to work it out somehow. And it's true. Like it is it's the elephant in the room that they're dealing with that anger, and it makes sense. I don't know if it's the most fun, but it does work nicely in contrast to the fact that the family idea is now stronger than it has been in a really long time.
Yeah.
And family is much more specific than when Hickman did it. And it was like family was just like 46 different kids running around. It was more like a class. Yeah. But this time you have, Ben and Alicia have the kids. It was a really creepy scene, by the way, at the beginning when she's like, I could kill him right now, maybe tomorrow. And I was like, ugh. and there's a nice scene between,
Well, then she emotionally crushes Alicia.
Yeah.
Like, I want to teach you to be a sculptor. You're going to teach me I'm a fucking Skrull. I'm a better sculptor than you. Mm-hmm. And Lucy's like, oh God, you are. It's like, oof. Rough.
And then, you know, like we had some really spacey, you know, Reed and Ben go. I mean, I like the idea, like this happened in that Cantwell book too, is that like Reed went to do something well-meaning, but he fucks it up because.
Well, he didn't fuck it up.
Right. But he got fucked
Bentley,
up. And
Bentley, the guy who's trying to date Val, fucked it up by going beating up her ex.
Who's a clone of the wizard.
Yes, he's a clone of the wizard.
And I thought for a second that that wasn't the wizard and that it was Immortus, and I got excited that it was Kang, but it isn't. And
but
that's fine.
Reed's plan was good until someone secretly used his gate, which meant he couldn't use it for a month. I mean, it's very much a comic.
Well,
know,
yeah, but, like a, but Reed was still out there in a place where they were doing the Ghostbusters thing of don't think of the Marshmallow Man. And so,
yeah, but they were having a male bonding thing. They were going fishing, but instead of fishing, they were punching space creatures.
Yeah, but then because of where they were, Ben thought of the thing that's been haunting him, which is the thing that he saw where he beats the shit out of Reed, and they know that that's supposed to be their future. And I was like, whoa. And there's drama there. It's not the most fun. And then we put young Franklin into therapy, where he talks to himself, which I was like, again, a lot in this book. Although the dumbest thing is that apparently where in the other book, Carol is wearing, again, a Minor Threat shirt. And if you don't know, Minor Threat is a seminal early 80s hardcore band out of Washington, D.C., known for starting the straight edge movement. It's the very short, fast songs with a lot of yelling. And then Franklin's shirt, Franklin, this teenager now, has a shirt that says Rock Band and has a speaker on it. Which... you know, try a little hard. Make a band up, you know?
Yeah, make a name. It's not that hard.
Rock band.
Should have just said t-shirt.
Teenage apparel.
Pants. I mean, this book is high on the gosh scale. And yes. It's probably the most purely high on the gosh scale that Marvel puts out on a monthly basis. And it's incredibly fun. It's still
It is
fun.
The most Fantastic Four book I've read in I don't know how long. And I really look forward to it now. Because for so long, I think I would start to try to read Fantastic Four wanting this out of it. And I didn't get it for a really long time. And now that this is going on, like, it's just everything's always crazy. And
turns out you were just waiting for Dan Slott to appear.
Who fucking knew? That's what's great. Like that's why you never want to write off any comic creator other than J. Michael Straczynski.
Well, he's already written you off, so it's fine.
It's fine. He writes off all the comics that he writes.
So, did you go back to Batman Superman number 2?
I hate to admit it, but
I'm sorry,
morning.
Not number 2. I put this in the wrong numbering in the script. Number 17, number 2 of the Gene Liang.
I actually did forget. I thought that I had read it because it was sort of at the beginning of the list, and then I realized that I hadn't gone back to it after it melted my little mind. I thought, oh, this is going to be really interesting, but I can't handle this. So, let me know what you thought.
Okay.
I'll finish
it. It was really good. I love this.
It was pick of the week last time.
Yes, at a time where I don't love what's going on in either of the Batman Superman books. This feels like a nice little respite of classic Batman Superman, especially here because we have basically golden age versions of these characters. Mm-hmm. And while it didn't exist across two strips of storytelling, the device is still heavily in play here as you know, the action is in one universe and all the panels are still encased in the film strips, and then it moves to the other one again. So they're still playing with the sort of meta aspect of these film strip universes. But the story in the midst of it is incredibly fun as, you know, they try to figure out what the hell's going on here in a world where Lois exists in both, but Superman doesn't. And, you know, they're very different versions of these characters, but they're also very classic feeling. Mm-hmm. I thought this was great. I mean, I just love that they're playing with the form and the idea that they get to, you know, Gene Liu Yang really gets to sort of flex his creative muscles here and play with the idea of even, you know, the reality of the page.
I think it's pretty fascinating because this book, you would think that this title would attract like the highest tier of talent. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, what I'm saying is that it is. I mean, you've got, While Yang isn't necessarily, you know, like a big fan favorite, you know, he's a huge talent. He's a Zurich, or not Zurich. He's a MacArthur. He's a genius. He's a certified official genius. Actually, he did win a Zurich also. That should be noted. you know,
he's a fan favorite outside of the world of comics.
Yes. Yeah. No, he's probably sold more graphic novels than most. But either way, you know, and then, you know, Ivan Reis, you know, that guy, that's a guy when artists could still headline fan books, you know, he could do that too. But I don't feel like they've actually done that so much.
I do want to point out real quickly that I don't know if we talked about this last time, but here Reis is being inked by Danny Mickey as opposed to his longtime inker, Joe Prado. Mm-hmm. And it's still very clearly Ivan Reis, but it has a totally different feel. I really like it.
I think it's cool for a guy like Reis who, I know, I think when you say him, you know, when you like you say his name, I think of a very specific thing. And here I feel like he's getting to be creative in a way that he hasn't been given anything in forever. And so you get to see him do, you know, new kinds of things. And sometimes, you know, when an artist is known for doing one kind of book all the time, you take for granted that they could probably do other things and they probably won't do. You know, and so getting to see this here is always impressive. I really like that. And I see what you're saying. I like Danny Mickey as an inker.
Yeah, I think he's terrific. I always thought that when he went off of Batman, the art wasn't, obviously it was Capullo, it was never bad, but it wasn't quite as special.
Well, Mickey's a guy who, and I'm just about talking out of my ass. I'll be honest with you. I know him, like he inks a lot of different people and styles. And I don't think that he makes it his own. So if you take somebody like a Klaus Janson or Bill Sienkiewicz, when they ink, these are people who've been working for 40 years, but when they ink somebody, you can see it's them.
Right.
Mickey tends to, he embellishes the person he's inking.
Yeah.
You know, like he improves the person he's inking, which is a, you know, which is how it used to be. It's really interesting. I it's hard to put a finger on it. But like I can't, I just know when I see his name, it's going to be a well inked thing. But I don't know what it's going to look like, other than it's going to look like the artist.
And he's you know, rare because there isn't a lot of inking left.
I tell you, it's really interesting to me how often when I do the scripts, you know, that how little I put in inker. And it, you know, it used to be like inker was part of the team. Like that was, there wasn't not an inker on things. That used to be unusual, and that's gone now.
I'm going to say something controversial.
Go for it.
I think you've, and I'm not going to study on this. I'm just talking off the top of my head. But I have thought about this a little bit. I think the loss of the inker and the transfer from physical to digital drawing has changed comic art, and not necessarily for the better. I find a lot of guys who used to draw physically now draw digitally. Their art is not as, there's not as much depth to it. It feels much, I don't want to say processed because that makes it feel like the computer's doing it, but it just feels different. And I can't put my finger on how.
I think there's
a different feel. Like Raphael Albuquerque is a big example. Like he used to have a really sketchy, hard style, and his lines are much thinner and lighter now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even Jamie McKelvey's art, who this week won Batman Black and White, did a story with Kieran Gillen. I feel like his art's slightly different too.
Well, there's two. Like, there's. I mean, some people just develop as time goes on and it tends to look different. So that's part of it. But I think there's obviously the medium is going to have something to do with what you get in the end. There's so many factors involved, and it's kind of fascinating to think about because there's an interesting economic component now in that. If an artist does everything themselves, then obviously the publisher doesn't have to hire an inker. The artist can make more money. The publisher can save money. I don't know if you get paid for both things or whatever. But then you've got the artist having to do more in the same amount of time that they were taking two people to do before. So, if, you know, like your day was just penciling, you give it over an inker, then you've got more time. But, you know, then you start getting to the, you know, the shortcuts and the, you know, being efficient. And I mean shortcuts in a, like, you're half-assing your work. You just learn to be efficient. Darwin Cook said this to us. He's like, I've gotten very efficient. And you can see that in his work. He never went digital, but you can see the kinds of changes that he made to how he drew over time to be more efficient to get the job done. And, you know, the problem, you know, for a lot of comic book art professionals especially is just that, you know, the grind is so, you know, relentless. And it just goes on and on and on. But I think that, yeah, you're seeing that in the art, and those are the kind of changes that I think you're talking about. But it's multifaceted.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, I'm not. Let me. I just noticed, you know, comics look a little different.
I'm looking at original art on my wall, and I know why, and I blame nobody for it. but it is such a bummer that there's going to be less of this.
There's hardly any.
I know. So most people...
Almost everyone's working digitally now.
I know.
And all the major people who are working on Marvel DC books all the time.
Or you know, like if there is art that exists, like it only exists in pencil because it was digitally inked. Or I hate the fact that there's a point where original pages don't have letters on them anymore.
Yeah.
But God, I think nothing to me in art, and I mean art, like physical art that you are looking at of any kind is more interesting to me than ink on the paper. That black India ink, you know, and the contrast between that and the white of the paper is one of my just favorite things to look at. And I, you know, I'm lucky. In front of me, I am looking at a Stuart Immonen page and a Darwin Cook page. I got a Gabe Hardman drawing over there, and you can see the ink and how each of those people used it. And that's not going to exist, nope. You know, other than a very specialized thing. And what a bummer. Have you ever, one of my favorite things, I keep going over this, but like one of my favorite things about comics, and this is actually a thing that's great about now, is on social media, you will see people, watching people draw, sketch out, do the pencils is cool or whatever. Mm-hmm. The coolest process is watching the ink hit the paper and watching that drawing.
It really comes alive then.
Yeah, exactly. That is the moment. More than the, you know, everything is important, but that sort of, you know, when it goes from a pencil drawing to an inked drawing is my, and you got to do it with that sort of fluid stroke.
I'm mesmerized. He hasn't been doing it in a while, but Mark Morales, one of the big inkers, yeah. He posts a lot of videos on Instagram of him inking commissions because he doesn't have any books to ink anymore.
Right.
And it's just watching the technique, you know, the mm-hmm. decisions he makes, the feathering, all the things that he decides to do, and that's not there. And it's mesmerizing. It's beautiful. Yeah. And you're losing all that.
You know, I'm looking. I have a Transmetropolitan page in front of me. And there's, you know, heavy black areas. And like, you know, I've owned this page for nearly 20 years. It was done, I don't know, 25, 26 years ago or something like that. You know, that black on that page is still black, black, black. You know? And it's just like, it's going to be there. And I love that. Well, there
so much for the email section.
So much for the email section. You know what? Ink and inkers need to be respected. So.
Yes.
I blame, true. But again, I think we could both say, we blame nobody. For doing what they have to do.
No, I totally understand why. Totally understand why.
Yep.
It's a bummer, that's all.
And now thank you to our sponsor, Macroverse, the new next-generation comics and webtoon app that is a universe of adventure. When you download the app for iOS or Android, not only do you get some of the best curated comics around, but you also get to read them using Macroverse's unique Tap Story format. Thanks to the unique Tap Story format, all the comics in Macroverse are custom crafted for your phone, adding the element of time and a page turn between each tap. The page turn is crucial.
It's cool.
Yes.
It's a cool format.
This means creators can craft the reading experience to create an immersive experience for humor, jump scares, and ultimately avoid from spoiling the story by scanning the page ahead, which is huge. It's the way comics would be if they were invented today. If you love comics and webtoons, you'll love it. Macroverse has comics for everyone. Comics for kids like Rock Mary Rock, for YA audiences like Glitch and Remind, horror with Dead Town and Dame Yaga. I'm going with, or Dame Yaga.
I think Dame Yaga as if she's a royal, but that's
yeah, fine. I'm feeling Dame Yaga like a Hellboy
that's
alien.
Probably more accurate. Dame Yaga. It's like a Downton Abbey-esque story.
Oh, you've won the wrong tales. And action like Billy Smoke, which we've said before, it's just great a fantastic title. And Anti, some of her picks from the app that you might want to check out are Remind, which is Eisner-nominated, a Miyazaki-esque tale of a young woman looking for her lost cat. But when he washes up on the shore of her sleepy coastal town with a head full of stitches, that sounds disgusting, and the startling ability to speak and no memory of how he got that way, her quiet life has changed forever. I'm actually wondering if the young woman is okay.
Right.
Because maybe the cat's not the issue. I'm sorry. There's Dead Town. This series follows Chan, a classic hard-boiled anti-hero, as he plies his trade in a world overrun by zombies. Visually inspired by the rich black-and-white style of Touch of Evil and the Maltese Falcon, which I wrote a paper on in college, Dead Town combines film noir with the zombie horror genre in an edgy reimagining of a detective thriller. You can also check out the release of season 2, which was out last month, of Paul Scheer's action comedy Aliens vs. Parker. This is a unique creator's cut of the Boom series, rewritten and reimagined specifically for Macroverse. If you want to get on board with the next generation of comics, then go download Macroverse today on iOS or Android. You can use this special link to get the app, ifn.by/macroverse, or go to ifanboy.com and click the link on this post about the podcast episode. With the app, you'll get multiple series with free episodes, and then it's $4.99 a month for unlimited access to all the great comics. Check them out at www.macroverse.com or download the app by going to ifn.by/macroverse. Thank you for your support, and go enjoy the next generation of comics with Macroverse. I know that we had Savage Avengers as a patron pick, I think on issue number 17. And yeah, I was like,
that was a really fun one.
It was. Yeah. It was. I was like, that was weird. And I think every time one comes out, I think, oh, I want him to read this. Did I read the last one or whatever? And I thought, oh, who cares? I'll just read it. So I grabbed Savage Avengers number 20. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what to make of it. It's a really weird book. This is not a complaint, but basically, there's a bank robbery to save the bar with no name. And Conan is the main bank robber, and I'm trying to remember who the other one was. I think Rhino. Rhino goes on a bank job with him so that they can make enough money to, because they have to keep moving the bar with no name around, and it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And then Spider-Man shows up to stop them. And I didn't quite understand what had happened to Conan. And then Conan also has, he got a sword from Null, so now he has like a symbiote arm power.
Oh, God. This is nothing I want in my life.
I don't know. It's just fucking weird enough that like it has a wackiness to it.
Sure.
That I can appreciate.
And look, I really enjoyed that issue.
Yeah.
Where Conan shoved Deadpool through the bars of the jail.
But
that was really funny.
Yes, it was. But I don't know I don't know where they are here. It's chapter 20. But it's funny because, like, you know, throughout this weird ass book, they still, all the narration still has the Robert Howard sort of Conan talk to it. The Sumerian would take advantage of the Rhino's distraction to descend into the vault. He's been in many vaults before. You know, like, he's just, well, and it actually did. You could see one of the old Conan stories where he's like robbing the treasury of some king, and you'd be like, yeah, it makes sense. So yeah, sure, he'd rob a bank here. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was weird.
He's no hero.
No,
he's Conan.
That's a good point too. Black Widow number 6. This is the first issue after the initial arc. And I'm just continually impressed by this and Kelly Thompson's work. I really like this take on the character. It's a fun book. It was a guest artist, Rafael De La Torre. It's really beautiful, colored by Jordi Belair. It's kind of a bummer that the movie didn't come out and this would, I mean, you know, this doesn't get the bump from that and that little synergy that goes around. But I think it's a good take on the character. Also, it's so sad, too, that she's just, every once in a while, she thinks about her baby. Just like, oh.
Yeah, that's exactly what I didn't want to get. That was my worry after issue 5, what I talked about in the show. And I didn't like that part. I hate her haircut. I think it's stupid, especially for someone who's trying to blend into the world as a spy. Makes her very recognizable. And I obviously wish she wasn't wearing this new dumb suit. But
she can't. It's a comic book. She can't be a dumpy lady.
And what I'm saying is, you know, you shave one side of your head.
Yeah,
it's a lot more memorable than just a redhead.
Not necessarily in San Francisco.
Well,
it was a really fun fight sequence, though, and fun stuff.
Oh, shit. I mean, the action's great, and you know, I still like, you know, Kelly Thompson writes her really well. My concern was, you know, in the same way that Damian permanently changes Batman, if you give Black Widow a kid that she has to never see again, it permanently changes the character. And I don't like when that happens. So that was my worry. And the little opening bit, you know, the recap said, you know, her fake husband and biological son are gone forever. And then the first thing that happens is she starts thinking about it. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, it's only been one issue.
I didn't love this issue. That's all.
I just think it is really beautiful. I think the action sequences were great, and I just like how Kelly Thompson writes it.
I like the recruitment of the thief. Now, the only problem with that is, similar to the bad food eating on page 7, is the thief pickpockets Black Widow by pulling her wallet through the bag, through the side of the bag, apparently.
Yeah. Well, that could be after she got it, and that doesn't seem like a good bag for pickpocketing.
No.
Did you end up picking up on Shadecraft?
I did not.
No? All right. Well, second issue came out. This is Joe Henderson and Lee Garbett, their follow-up to Skyward from Image Comics. And basically in this, it's a lady, it's a girl whose brother has been put into a coma by a car accident. And she has shadows coming after her. And then we find out at the end of the last issue, which was not terribly clear, that her shadow, her own shadow, has been possessed by her brother who is in the coma. And so now she walks around with her brother talking to her in the form of her shadow, and he gives her a hard time. But not like in the mean way, like he's fucking with her. Like a brother might. It was kind of funny. It was. I kind of just wish that this was a little more clear in the last issue what this was, because it was like they picked it up and this was. I was like, oh, this is what the book is, and it was fun. It was good. I like the way they make comics. It wasn't amazing, but I really liked all of Skyward, and I liked you know, Lee Garbett is an underappreciated gem of an artist, and you know, it's one of those things they're doing what they want to, and I kind of get the feeling too like it could go anywhere, and I like that.
This is the final issue of the Comic Book History of Animation. This is number 5 by Fred Van Lente, Ryan Dunleavy, and Adam Mikozowski. And yeah, not as impactful. Again, not 5 issue miniseries. Not as impactful as the Comic Book History of Comics, obviously, but I still find this really interesting. And this was the issue probably most relevant to most people listening to the show. It's the, you know, the rise of Pixar, the history of that, which was really interesting, you know, while also anime is happening in Japan. And then we get to like Batman the Animated Series in the 90s and The Simpsons and the 90s, you know, sort of Disney revitalization with like Lion King and, you know, Little Mermaid. And then to the point now with like adult cartoon Space Ghost happens in the, you know, late 90s. And then to the point where we have all kinds of cartoons being made all kinds of ways for all kinds of people. This was fun. I mean, I love these kind of historical comics that these guys do. And animation's interesting, and it's, you know, sort of tangentially related to comics in a way. So it's, you know, it's fun, and it was all interesting. There's a lot of things I learned here that was fun, including the fact that Matt Groening's character designs that he just dashed off to give the animators to redo, they just traced. That's why the early Simpsons looked so shitty. He figured they'd make them better. They didn't. They just traced them.
Now, someday when there are parties again, you will have many anecdotes.
Bruce Timm knocked out the model for Batman for the animated series in an hour.
Thus the simplistic, you know, it's like Keith Richards in Satisfaction.
Well, it was actually what you were talking about earlier with Darwin Cook. It's like the fewer lines, the better. Was
yes.
His idea that the less lines that the animators will deal with, then the less, you know, iffy the animation gets. So that was his idea. But the beginning of Pixar was really fascinating and interesting, and how that sort of came about. And we don't have time to go into it here, but it's very, if you like animation and all, this was a must-read miniseries.
That's really cool.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, there is the patron pick where every patron votes every week to add a book to the rundown. And this week, it was a relatively close race for a while, but in the end it was Robin number 1, probably surprising no one, written by Joshua Williamson, with art by Gleb Melnikov. And our letters by Troy Piteri, Peter Thierry, Peter Thierry.
That is, it's not. It's Piteri. Not Peter Thierry. Troy Piteri.
Piteri.
Would you have read this had it not been the pick?
Hell no.
That's a hell no. Okay,
no.
It's an obvious patron pick because it's something they'd be interested in.
But every once in a while, they like to slide a knife into the ribs of you or I.
Well, this but this is your, because I read it anyway.
I got knife stabbed this week.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you feel about Mortal Kombat?
Never played it. Don't have any.
Well, this is Mortal Kombat, but with Robin. That's what this is. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Is it the Kumite?
I know that word, but I don't actually know what it. I don't know where it's from or what it means.
Jean-Claude Van Damme classic.
Oh, sort of. Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Boy, that's something I haven't thought about in about 30.
I think about Kumite at least once a week.
I think the only thing I remember about Bloodsport is the guy's leg bone popped out. That's all I remember about it. It got me when I was, I don't know,
you know, 86, 80s 10. Movies. Really made me think there was a lot more underground fighting tournaments going on in the world than there actually seemed to be.
And quicksand.
Because there was that's right. You either ended up in an underground fire tournament or you ended up dying in quicksand. Yeah. That was how I thought adulthood would go. Mm-hmm. But instead, I'm in marketing. So.
I read this anyway. I'd actually downloaded it because I thought, well, I know that Josh Williamson is a stout yeoman of work, and he will try great. To do something that's fun.
I have no problem with the creative team.
Damien has decided to take off on his own to win and compete in and win the Lazarus tournament or something like that.
Lazarus. Well, it's on Lazarus Island.
Okay, whatever. There's a tournament has something to do with Lazarus. Lazarus is the pit where his grandfather would regenerate himself to become immortal, as Ra's al Ghul does.
The League of Lazarus tournament.
Okay, there you go. And every 100 years, you can get there. And then everybody has to fight, and then this one person will be, I don't know what you get if you win. You get to be a tough guy, which is sort of what these folks are into. And so he gets there, and everyone's like, what's this kid doing here? And then like, that's Damien. It's like, oh, you know, like, and he's wearing his new, does he wear this costume in other books, or is this just for this story?
Well, so the backstory is he quote unquote quit being Robin. That's the patch that's Bruce is looking at in the mansion. It's torn a little bit. He tore it off his chest and he quit. And then he went off to hang out with his mom. That was happening as backup stories for a couple of issues of Batman. And then he somehow ended up here. So this is sort of his, I'm not Robin anymore yet. I've got a giant R in my chest costume.
Okay. Now
I call myself Robin, but I'm not Robin anymore.
I had fun with this. I enjoyed it. I think I do think that there is a possibility that Damien can be an interesting character if written with depth. And I think that we saw this the same week over in John Kent has been an enormous lifesaver for that version of the character, the conversation they had in Action Comics this week. And then so then he goes over here and you know, there could be real depth to the character. It's a hell of a backstory. And like, I think your thing is like, yeah, but I don't want this to be any part of this. And I get that. But if you can look at this on its own, you know, aside from those things, you know, like, I could ask you, could there be a Kyle Rayner story that you would like? And you would probably say no. But I think this is a little like that. Like, if it's stuck on its own, it's its own. Like, he goes to this fighting tournament. It's simple enough. I hope it's not 12 issues of this. That would be very silly. But 3, 4, 5 issues of this story, you know, let this kid with, a huge attitude and confidence, you know, go in here and you'll see him ups and downs and he'll probably win. And it could be fun. That's kind of how I looked at it.
There are deep cuts, relatively deep cuts here. He fights King Snake. Connor Hawk is in the tournament.
You probably recognize the deep cuts more than I did.
Yeah. I mean, they hinted at Connor Hawk before. Who else is in this tournament? The Ravager. I mean, not super deep cuts, but they're you know, relatively deep cuts. First, they really need to get on the same page about how Batman looks. And now, I mean, is his costume blue and gray or is it black and gray? Because I thought we all settled on black and gray. And now here it's back to being blue and gray. So that's the first thing. Second, I refuse to acknowledge this book's right to exist.
Fair enough. And I believe that Flatline is a new character.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's a bad 90s. It's like, oh, I can see when you've just made up a character for this, and hopefully she just won't be around long. But
what did you think about the art from Gleb Melnikov?
I liked it. I think that this is the kind of art that I often think works best with Robin books.
Mm-hmm.
I think for one thing, it lets them more easily define, if done well, the difference between adult and child. So you can tell some of the more realistic artists have a hard time making him look young enough.
Yeah, here he's very skinny and tiny.
Yeah, like you can just tell very quickly visually who he is and how old he is. And at one point here, he actually says, I'm 14, which is like, I don't think I've ever actually heard them say the age of a Robin, or at least it doesn't happen all that often.
Right.
I think that the costume, if you look on page 19 of the digital reader, the costume is terrible. Like, I didn't think it was so bad until I saw it here, and it's got like the little pointy ends of the tunic coming out underneath the belt. And then the shoes have a point on them, which is just awful. Why do you know
it's that? What are the straps on his ribcage for?
It holds the armor on either side.
I see.
That's how
He's wearing a girdle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's high. It's way up there.
How does he breathe?
Well, he's quite in shape. And, you know, they do amazing thing with plastics today. Let's say that you're denying it its rights to exist, but on its own, did you find it enjoyable enough? Well made?
Promise, I loathe the main character with every fiber of my being.
That's fair.
So it's hard to look past that.
You know, actually,
it's fine.
This occurred to me.
Book, it's fine.
I was thinking about this the other day, and we don't have time for this conversation, but who would be the character that you would most immediately banish from DC? Like, would it be Damian? Would it be Lobo?
It would be Damian. Because Damian forever changes Batman in a way that doesn't help his character, whereas Lobo can come and go. But Damian has taken the most recognizable superhero on the planet and fundamentally altered him.
That's Grant Morrison's fault.
Yeah. No, ultimately it is. And we didn't realize at the time that it was happening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Because usually you think, well, this will go away. But also, it should be said, you know, like, there's some reason why it stuck. You know what I mean? Like,
and it's a corporate reason. I don't know why. I'd love to talk to someone.
Do you think it's a corporate reason? Do you think that he hasn't? Because I feel like the character has resonated with maybe newer readers than us.
There's a small percentage of people, but there's no way he's a popularity eclipses someone like Tim Drake, who, from the majority of people reading, not for me, but for the majority of people reading, is the primary Robin.
Interesting.
There's got to be some sort of corporate reason for it, and I don't understand what it is.
Okay.
We've had this conversation many times on many, many shows, but
yeah.
Anyway, I mean, like, look, if it's a comic, if you take the art of his chest, you make this guy a new character named Sprite.
What if it's Duke?
Toe boot. You know, it was fine. It was fun. Like, you know, guy goes to the Kumite and fights and gets his heart pulled out. So I guess the problem's solved because he's dead. The issue ends with Flatline pulling his heart out of his chest. So
it's a fight to the death is what we find at the end.
Rather unbloody heart.
Well, he's cold-blooded little fucker. That's the thing about spending too much time around the Lazarus pits. That's what they don't tell you.
My problem is solved. He's gone.
All right, cool.
So
in
it's
that
fine,
case, you give it a five.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, you know, for what it was in terms of comic book making, and the art's good. You know, if I'm rating this book, ratings out of five, I'm giving it a 3.5 as a comic, a 0 as a Damian story, and a 5 if Damian's actually dead.
I like that sliding scale. I'm going to give it a 3. It's a perfectly serviceable comic book.
Yeah, it's serviceable.
There you go. So you're not reading.
Are you going to read more?
I might. Yeah, I might.
Okay. Yeah. You don't often read more three star books.
I mean, it had a little bit of the gosh in me that I think had a little good old superhero action that I'm kind of. I don't hate Damian.
I'm not holding it against you. I don't hold it against anyone who likes.
No,
Damian,
I know that.
Although I think, question your character judgment, but
I think I pull for Damian because I think the idea is he's not going anywhere. So if he's gonna be around, at least make him good.
Well, and that's totally fine. But they haven't, and he's been around a long time.
I know.
And he's
I really
not just. Asshole.
I have really liked him in the Action Comics stories where he's with John Kent. Mm-hmm. I think that is the best place he is because that's much like Batman.
Was deceased because that was an Elseworld story, which he was older. It didn't matter. I don't mind him in that setting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but that said, I haven't read any of Super Sons. I just think, you know, in those things where like in Legion where he shows up and, you know, it's that one place where he lets his guard down. And it's just a normal human with somebody in the same way that Batman is with Superman. I like that parallelism. I don't hate him, but I don't, you know, genie's out of the bottle at this point, basically, though.
Yeah.
And Hal Jordan came back, though, and now Kyle Rayner is more or less gone, so you never know.
But now Hal's gone again. It doesn't matter. The wheel keeps spinning. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. You can vote to add a book to the rundown. And if you give it the $5 or higher level, get your superpower live on the show.
Steve Sousa has the uncanny ability. It's not even an ability. It's a thing that happens. No one ever forgets his name or face. Once they've met him, they remember him. It is always, you know, it, once he's made the impact, there's no, you know, and that gives and takes.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an ultimately, absolutely rememberable face and name. So once somebody's met him, they know him forever.
And just in passing?
Just, yeah.
So he's like, he leaves an indelible mark. That's his aura, superpower aura.
Yeah, he's like a celebrity, but without any of the benefits.
Stephen Schmeling. I have superhero names to go with each of mine this week.
Okay.
Stephen Schmeling is known as Blacklight.
Oh.
Because Stephen Schmeling can emit blacklight. You know, like...
Yeah.
He can do it two ways.
I assume he hates staying in mid-level hotels.
And everyone else wants him to come to parties in college. He can do it in two ways. One, he can emit like an ambient blacklight from his palms. So like, you know, that's party Steve. You know, like turn off the lights, have Steve activate the lights, and he, you know, everyone's teeth start glowing. Or from his fingertips, he can do blacklight spotlights.
Ooh.
That's where you get to the...
Like a laser pointer?
Yeah.
Nice.
A crime scene, Steven. But yeah, no, hotels are just a disaster for him.
Yeah. I'm not staying there.
Don't activate the powers.
Can he turn it off? Can he not?
Yeah. It's activated.
Okay, so he just does.
So he's not walking around constantly emitting blacklight.
Yeah. No. It's just that point when you're laying in the hotel bed at night, you're about to go to sleep, and you just think, maybe I should just... Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
How did they get semen up there?
There's biological material everywhere. Matt Pfaff has a name and a face that no one remembers. No one.
Not his family, his good no friends.
One. Every time that he meets somebody he's met before, it's as if they've never seen or met him. Now, it can exist on paper. You know, like it can be like they can look him up and be like, oh, yeah, right here, Mr. Pfaff. But he can operate in the world. I mean, let's be honest. He'd make a brilliant thief.
He would.
Who did it? I just don't know. Yeah, I just don't know. You could put him in a lineup. Nothing.
So you're telling me this man walked in, took the painting off the wall, talked to you for half an hour and left. And you couldn't even tell me what color his hair was.
Worse than that. They can pull up the videotape, yeah. Watch the video. There he is. We got him dead to rights. Put him in the lineup. And it's like, it's not nothing here ringing a bell. Like
you created a supervillain.
I mean, it depends on how you want to go. He could be the world's...
Listen, sometimes it's supervillain. Sometimes that's how it goes.
It's about remembering the name or face, though. So there's other ways that he could establish relationships with people. He's just got to be creative about it.
Mm.
So like if you're the spy runner at the CIA, like there's ways to remember him, but every time he shows up, like he knows about the person, but every time he shows up, it's just like he's never seen him before.
Rachel Cutler, her superhero name is Lava Lamp, because anytime she touches a lamp, it turns into a lava lamp.
Ooh.
Real groovy lava lamp.
Here's the thing that I learned about lava lamps, because both of my children wanted them and we have them. When you turn a lava lamp on, it takes about 8 to 12 days before it actually starts doing its lava thing.
Are they making shitty lava lamps now? First of all,
yeah.
I'm glad you brought this up, because one of my questions was going to be, do people still have lava lamps? Because in college, you know, we had lava lamps, we had bean bags, we were trying to be in the 60s, it was the 90s.
It's a remarkably dangerous thing, I think.
I assume if like you knocked one over and it cracked open, everyone would die in the building.
Yeah, that's but it's just it, like it's a little light bulb, and the idea is that you heat up the stuff and it just takes forever. And especially like we're in New England, so in the winter, like the rooms that you're not in are cold, and you know the lava looks horrible when it's not.
I mean, it's a thing for stoners.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a thing where you get high and you look at the lava. I had one in college. I had a red one. And I had a red beanbag.
And you thought, ladies are going to like this ambiance. Oh, yeah.
And they did.
The captain shows up. So there are your paid. We're getting near the end of the backlog. So the people who had to wait a little longer are getting there. But I think, I don't know if this is wrong. I think we put in a lot of effort for these ones. And I think there's been some fine ones in here.
I agree. I totally agree.
So if you want to become part of that, I'm going to do this quick. It's late. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you go to. That has been why we have the patron picks. We have the patron powers that we just did. Talksplodes, Booksplodes, Mediasplodes, and all the YouTube content is all going up there because of the patron support. There are other stretch goals that we have when we get to them. We will talk about those at another point. There's also the monthly patron hangout, which happens live once a month. That's what monthly means. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. the Faceboy. Jesus, this week. There is,
what is that word?
I don't know. There's the patron. It's because we're iFanboy with Facebook. That's why. So I said Faceboy. Patron Facebook group and the patron Discord server, which are fun communities and they're places to go. Sometimes we will be on Discord. I cannot remember it exists more than once every 2 weeks. I don't know why. It's on. I just can't do it. It's not them. It's me. I'm a busy man. You can go to iFanboyThreadless.com. There's 8 t-shirts designs there. Here's a random thing I will say. I have some shirts that I bought about the same time. One was one of our shirts. Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters. I believe I am wearing it right now. Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And I bought another shirt from one of the other kinds of, you know, the well-known places where you would mm-hmm. buy shirts that have original designs. The other one, like, the design's almost completely gone a year uh-huh. later, and the iFanboy one's holding up great. And they're both awesome. On the same kind of, like, I like the Ultra Soft, the Tri-Blend, the one mm-hmm. that has a little heathered look to it, those. It's holding up great. I can say that about them. iFanboy.com/support is a place where you don't want to deal with any of that. You go there. You can do direct donations via PayPal. iFanboy.com/Amazon is a link to buy stuff on Amazon. Buy the books from our books below. There's a general link there. That doesn't cost you anything. It helps the show out if you purchase things through there. We appreciate when you do. And honestly, they've got enough money, so give us some of it. That's where I'm going with that. Let's do one of these questions.
You pick.
Dan says, recently, I've been listening to a number of comic creator interviews and noticed one common element when people describe their indie book, the proverbial, oh, it's like this well-known property meets this other well-known property, Game of Thrones meets the Smurfs, or Breaking Bad meets the Walking Dead. While I understand it's easy shorthand and does have me thinking too often that comics are driven by concept instead of character, and we end up in this diminishing returns cloud of pop culture where everything is a rehash of what came before. Do you think being overly reliant on what came before is a problem with current comics, even more so than in the past, since we have so many more comics and familiarity is one way to garner attention? That's called, by the way, that's called a high concept pitch. It is not new.
It came around in movies.
I think one of the popular accepted times, and this isn't scientific, is that the pitch for Alien was Jaws in space. That's the most famous sort of initial version of that, and then from there,
or there's Die Hard in a blank,
right. But I'm saying, like,
Speed, Die Hard in a
right. But I think the Jaws in space was the first one. Like, that's the sort of accepted. Saying, yes, and it goes on like that. So Die Hard in a bus.
I think it's conflating several. I mean, it's not. High concept pitching has nothing to do with really. It's just a way of marketing your thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make Alien any less of a great film, or Speed any less of a great film because it's Die Hard in a bus.
That's how you sell something. However, I think that we've seen you know, it can have bad consequences too, which is you sell something based on a concept, and he's saying here instead of character, and if we're seeing that more in comics, and I think the answer is yes. Know. Oh, see, I think it is. Here. I mean, okay.
I don't think the way you pitch something has any bearing on the way you execute something. It's all about execution. I mean,
well, I think
Miami Vice was one of the great cop shows of the 80s, and it was pitched on a napkin saying MTV Cops. Like, that's, I mean, it doesn't matter what the pitch is. It just matters how you execute it.
I think it takes an enormous amount of talent to be able to turn something that simple into something that's any good. And if you're selling it based on the prospect of it, that doesn't mean that you can follow up on it. And I think that what you find out is that when people are buying pitches based on those sort of, you know, high concept ideas, there's not a surefire way that's going to
I also don't know that
get translated.
Comics are being, that's not how comics are pitched. You have to write up a whole fucking Bible and everything. That's not how comics are pitched to.
Well, if you take Marvel a thing DC. Like, basically, we're not talking about, I don't think I'm talking about Marvel and DC so much. That might happen there. But like the indie comics, you're talking about Boom, you're talking about Image, you're talking about, you know, any of those sort of smaller publishers. Like, I think we've definitely seen that happen in Image. And Image, by the way, you pitch a comic on a one pager. You know, that's basically, you want to get it on one page. It sort of say what it is. You want to get the concept across really quickly. you know, you want it because that's what they think a fan is going to do. Like when a fan wants to evaluate something on the shelf, they need to be able to sort of figure it out really quick. And it does reduce things down, but that has a lot to do with a lot of things. You know, attention span is a big one, and you know, disposable income to pay for a $6 issue of a book you've never heard of. And yeah.
Right. But, I mean, everything is marketing ultimately. I mean, you have to sell books to people who don't want to buy them. And so you have to figure out how to do that. And, you know,
I think though that leads to saleable concepts rather than good stuff in many instances.
I don't necessarily think that's true. Really? I mean, I also don't know that. I also can't think of a single example of this, of comics where this, someone said, this is Game of Thrones meets the Smurfs. You know, like, does it?
I think there's a billion books that, I mean, I talked about this before. Like, I think right now there's Apocalypse and Kaiju. And so it's like Godzilla and zombies, or we've seen like robot gorilla meets zombies on the moon. It, like, there's been a lot of that. And it, or it's like, I mean, you could look at any release of Image books and 75% of them are going to get boiled down to like a really, you know, it's like our same thing where we go, oh, this story sounds interesting. It's the border crisis, but he's the Human Torch. You know, like, I'm not saying
that's everything. No, I just don't think that's how things are pitched. I just don't think this is, I think these are concepts from the films and not comics. I just don't think that high concept pitching is really a problem in comics. I don't think it's a problem in films, honestly.
Well, there you go. I believe that we both answered that question to the best of our ability.
I mean, it's never really changed. You always have to sort of pitch something, you know. First of all, you got to pitch an editor doesn't want to buy your book, and then you got to pitch an audience doesn't want to buy your store doesn't want to buy your book, and then you got to pitch an audience doesn't want to buy your book. So you have to be able to do it in a way to get it across. It's real.
Okay.
It's very rarely has it to do with the actual content.
Do you think it's easier to sell a book with a higher concept and with a high concept and a worse story than a book with a more difficult concept and a better story?
Right, that's why the high concept exists. But it has nothing to do with the quality of the story. It just depends.
I feel like the former is more common now in indie comics, or at least, you know, like non-big two comics, than it was previously. I just think we've got more, like, Image Comics is putting out more things that seem like high concepts than they feel like fleshed out stories. It's Peter Pan in World War II. It's, you know, and it, if you can. And that's kind of as far as they got a lot of times. Like, but if then you think about, like,
that was a very good book though.
But again, that's not necessarily bad. But they tend to often be more half baked than otherwise. Whereas if you were to go backwards and say, like, look at Transmetropolitan, I don't know what the pitch for that is. Hunter S. Thompson in the future, but you can kind of do it for anything. But
well, that's exactly my point. Is you can make a high concept of anything. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
It just all comes down to execution.
Doesn't matter what comes up, what happens, what it is first, though.
No.
All right.
Only thing that matters is what the result is.
You have a bunch of high concept pitches in somewhere, don't you?
I mean, I just understand that you got to. This is how the sausage is made.
Sure.
The only thing that matters in anything is what the execution is, what the result is. Doesn't matter how it got there. Robert Kirkman lied about his pitch to get his book out.
Yeah.
The book was really good. Didn't matter.
Right. But that means that he had the story and the characters and everything in mind as a thing. Because he had the talent to do it. I just feel like we're not seeing that as much.
But also, there was no zombie book. So,
all right, here.
Stigma attached to zombie books.
This is what I would tell you, is that I feel like people are much better at pitches than they are at storytelling now.
Oh, sure. Pitching is easy.
This is nothing. This is nothing. I'm 4 months into the Song of Solomon when I find I don't have the rights. You try. 4 a.m., I'm coked to the gills. I haven't even read the treatment.
Yeah, no, pitching is just is selling, and then that's the easy part.
So you're talking about the methodology of the pitch, and I am talking about the quality of the work that comes out of it.
Right, and I think they're irrelevant to each other.
I see.
That's my point.
Well, but I think that you could say that if somebody has a talent in pitching that thing, but not necessarily a talent in storytelling, that it's possible they could get more work made, and therefore the work would suffer more.
But, like, I've heard that, like, Rob Liefeld is like the best comic book pitcher that's ever lived.
Yeah.
And so, but at the end of the day, the work is what matters. His books don't sell that much because they're not, you know.
Yeah. But he gets to make them.
He did.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Fair enough.
At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is what the book that comes out. You know, I just don't see what Dan's seeing, which maybe I'm just don't, you know, I could be wrong.
I do, but we've talked about it. It's fine. I don't think there's a right answer. I wish there were more good comics.
Sure. And I don't care how they're pitched, as long as they're good. Contact@fanboy.com. That's you can write in for comic discussion or for media splode discussion on our monthly media splode show, our general media shows, which we have many shows. Like this past month, we had Book Splode for Avengers West Coast Vision Quest. Do we want to tell them what the next one is?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So the last Book Splode is Avengers West Coast Vision Quest. We're telling you this now because even though it's the next show won't be till June, because it's a long one, I've only barely cracked the surface of it. It's the Injustice Gods Among Us Year One, the complete collection. So we're finally delving into Injustice after really enjoying the Injustice Year Zero series.
By Tom Taylor and 7,000 artists.
Including Bruno Redondo, the current artist of Nightwing, including Kevin Maguire.
Yeah.
Look at, including some other people who are not at that, those guys' levels. Injustice Gods Among Us Year One, the complete collection, is the next Book Splode in June. In between that, there'll be a Talk Splode in May. Those are our other shows, and like the Media Splode, which has just came out right behind this show, is our monthly non-comics media show. We talked about the Oscars. We talked about the best pictures after having watched a lot of them. We talked about fan service. We debated that. We talked about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, because that's what the fan service conversation came out of. We talked about something else. I can't remember. We talked about vinyl. A lot of things happened on the Media Splode. And also, coming up soon, I believe...
The show vinyl.
The show vinyl. The plan is to do a special edition podcast on Invincible, the television cartoon series based on the comic book. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. We haven't recorded it yet.
Mm-mm.
So I hate to promise it, but we've been talking about it. A special animation brain trust, possibly guest starring Josh, episode about Invincible.
Nice.
I just threw Josh under the bus for that.
You did. That's fine. I wasn't really iffy on it, so it's fine. Go over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows in the vast history of comic book writing from all of our talented writers. All the podcasts we've ever done are there. Well, the ones that are there. Like, you can like facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter and @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out at those places. You can see panels of the week over on Instagram and Connor's thankless task of finding something to let you know that there are new comics coming out.
Some week it's easier than other weeks.
Yeah. You should submit things. You should submit things to Connor, or you could send them to contact@ifanboy and say, this would be a good panel for that. I think we would appreciate that. And then we would also probably see some cool things in there. Don't abuse it. Follow us individually. See us at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram, at JA Flanagan on Instagram. And of course, subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy and like those videos and subscribe over here in the corner. And then also check out these every time. Oh, I can't help. They all talk up at a level that I don't feel that excited about anything. And all of the screenshots look the same. It's just a close up of some dude's face who doesn't have a job being really excited. Constantly about everything. If you're excited about everything, then nothing matters. Mm-hmm. We don't do that on our fucking 15-year-old shows. So the shows that came out this week are a mini, which is Avengers the Initiative number 12, which Ron is talking about. And it's interesting because I was like, I kind of remember that. That was 12 issues, whatever that was.
That was 12, and I have no idea why Ron decided to do a mini on it, but there it is.
Yeah, it was his pick of the week.
No, because those were called Pick of the Week. So he just wanted to talk about that issue.
Whatever. We did our show on Watchmen. I remember doing that. I said, we should talk about Watchmen. I guess you should watch it.
The movie was coming out.
Yeah, and you should watch it and tell us if you think we got anything right. I wonder if I would still agree with myself from them. And then, of course, there was our WonderCon 2009 show.
That was the show where we interviewed the cast of Watchmen.
Well, look at that. We also wonder if Dave Gibbons still has that shirt.
Gave Dave Gibbons and we gave
Rorschach.
What's his name?
Early Haley?
Jackie Earl Haley.
Jackie Earl Haley.
firm shirt, and Jackie Earl Haley came back out after the junket and asked if he could have another one for his buddy. And we were like, you can have as many as you want, Jackie Earl Haley.
I tried to name him F. Lee Bailey, I believe.
And that was fun.
Wrap it up.
Oh, right. If you like the show, write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever podcasts are sold. Better yet, tell your friends, your mom, your kid, your letter carrier, the nurse giving you the vaccine, anyone who you meet now that you're going outside again. even though you might still be wearing your mask, you can still tell them about it. And I was going to say put on an iFanboy mask, which are available at the Threadless store, but we had a patron tell us that his job asked him to stop wearing the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters mask to work.
Which warms my heart.
Which is the best thing that's ever happened to us.
Yes.
Yes, so there you go. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm that nice daddy extra party starter. Number one hard ripper potter. More vice and gambling in Las Vegas, Nevada. I try harder every day. It's all work and no play.